WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our Baltimore Positive broadcasts are brought to you by our great sponsors. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. I have promised that we're going to get outdoors soon. I've given Don Moeller the green light that I'm getting my second shot. We're going to do some outdoor stuff next month, right after Preakness, but hopefully before Memorial Day. Don, I've got on the back of the shirt here, I don't know if you see, is that the chairs, the moving of the chairs?
It's the, Marty knows it well, our guest. It's the game of chairs going down Frederick Road. It's a rite of passage here in Neville.
Well, we're going to begin the crab cake tour at Fadley's and at Costas, my two longtime sponsors. We're going to get back to Fadley's, hopefully with Nancy Devine. I'm not sure if we're going to do that segment Zoomed or not. Certainly going to get with Pete and Nick over at Costas. But Don, when I started talking about doing this crab cake tour and going from Ocean City to the other side of the state, I talked about doing it in July. I'm now going to do it in August because I've become better educated about crabs in the bay, learning about oysters and grass and all of that. I think I got inspired a little bit last year visiting you on the Eastern Shore and driving up from Newport News in Norfolk, you know, up through Assateague and Chincoteague and the Eastern Shore and Chrisfield. I've never been to Smith Island. So all of this stuff that I wanted do, zip lining, Deep Creek, Rocky Gap, taking trains in the Frostburg. I'm going to do it with crab cakes, and I want to do it with Maryland crab cakes. And lo and behold, you being the teacher, me being the student, you said, I've got a guy. And I'll let you go from
it's
there.
It's the famous I've got a guy. And in this case, I've got a guy. We often say we know I'm old, but I often say I know a lot of our guests since they were young. This guy I actually have known since the day he was born. Lucky enough to have his sister be married to my brother. She keeps us all straight. But we welcome really one of the nationwide experts on fisheries and bay and water quality, Marty Gary, Executive Secretary, Potomac River Fisheries Commission. Marty, it's great to have you in Baltimore Positive.
Well, thank you, D.I., and thank you, Nestor. It's a privilege to be on with you, and thanks for that intro. Boy, I'm going to get a lot high bar to live up to.
Hang on a second. Hold on, because we're going to go to Catonsville. We're going to do the show, but let me just say this. Everyone in Catonsville is related to Moeller. So this does not shock me in some way that you're somehow married to a Moeller over the 2-1-2-2. So my idea now, I've borne it out. I've fleshed it out a little bit. It kind of came to me when my cousin came to visit in January in sort of a weird way through a business thing. But I'm sort of putting this thing together. And you and I had a very quick sort of chat, and I ran this whack job idea by you. I've now talked to a couple of your friends and friends of friends and other people, and I've moved this thing into August. Gives me another month to put it together. I'm combining it with some stuff my wife wants to do and fly fishing and friends and celebrities and all this other stuff. But the bottom line is on the bay and on crabs, I am finding we're one of the most unique ecosystems on earth, right? Like this is a very, very unique place that a kid from Dundalk in a social studies course that you really can have a lifetime of knowledge and learn about what's going on about that crab that shows up at Costas or Fadley's in front of us, right?
So, Marty, we normally have social studies class. Today, Nestor wants science class. Educate us about the bay and why it's important and what's going on, all those things Nestor alluded to.
Yeah, so we are lucky to have the Chesapeake Bay, the largest estuary in North America, here on our doorsteps. And that's why so many of us live around the bay. I mean, we were all born and raised here, but we didn't move away, right? And more people are coming into the watershed. And it's because of the Chesapeake Bay, the quality of life, the bucolic setting. But this, what we call anthropogenic impacts, the human impact on the aquatic resources is really, really challenging for folks in my profession and everybody else that cares about the bay. It all comes down to water quality. If the water quality isn't good, then oysters, crabs, pick your whatever subject matter.
Marty, I was going to run for mayor. Moeller didn't want me to run for mayor. We talk about this, but water for me, and I live, this is where I live. This is my window. Mm-hmm. I wake up to this. I put the beautiful rose thing up because I really wanted to highlight how beautiful the bay is and this little piece of it. And I see shiz floating around in it from time to time, as you can well imagine. And, you know, I think about all the poo and pee and flush and runoff and dry off and salt and, bleh, you know, whatever dumping into it. Right. And I see the gutters here in the city. But, you know, I know what happened in Flint, Michigan. I know about lead pipes. And I, you know, I've seen municipalities now talking about infrastructure. But the impact on what goes in this, I mean, I grew up in Dundalk. My parents would always tell me, for better or worse, we would always smell the Back River plant. I mean, it's a joke, right? Like, I have shirts with it, right? But my parents would tell me, you don't want to eat the catfish out of the Back River. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my parents would tell me in 1976. That's a bad seed, right? I mean, all along. But for the Bay, is the Bay getting healthier? I can probably get two answers to that. But I think we should all be concerned about that.
Well, it's complicated. The direct answer to your question, is it getting better? Is the answer would be yes. Incrementally, but very, very tiny increments. Pick again which part of the aspect of water quality you want to address. Nutrients is one you just mentioned with sewage treatment plants, right? That's a point source. But there's agricultural nutrients that come into the Bay from farms run off of nitrogen and phosphorus. Those have been some of the biggest challenges we've had. We are actually making big progress on those with things called TMDLs. It stands for total maximum daily loads. Sort of like a nutrient diet for the Bay. And so the EPA, working with Chesapeake Bay Program, working with all the states in the watershed, which, by the way, include New York, West Virginia, the everything that drains into the Bay is much bigger than Maryland and Virginia.
So when I say we're all drinking the same water, we're all drinking the same water, right?
Yeah, yeah. So nutrients are a huge part of that, and we are making some good progress on that. But there's so many other aspects. For instance, you know, every day, week, month that goes by, new construction projects. What happens? They pave parking lots. That's impervious surface, right? So stormwater is what I'm driving at. Stormwater is a form of pollution. It brings in a lot of toxics, everything from just trash and garbage and plastics to atmospheric type of contaminants that settle on parking lots. So you get a big rainstorm. It all flash floods into a stream and river and eventually makes its way to the Bay. So the sum total of all these things, nutrients and other types of pollution, are a challenge. So are we making progress? Yes. Are we also adding more people and more impacts to the watershed? Yes. So it's a long haul process where we have to buckle down. Every administration that comes in has to put it at the top of their list, and try to address it the best they can.
Top of the list, literally.
Well,
you know, we remember, Marty, we've had former Governor O'Malley on, and one of the things he was most proud of was his push to truly use data to analyze the health of the Bay in the way they were using data in so many other things. He said, we've got to be able to show people, to get to your point, if the Bay's getting cleaner or not. And what I like about your approach is you talk about it's everything. Like, you sent us some charts and you talked about challenges for the Bay, and you mentioned urban sprawl and land planning and deforestation, impervious surfaces, tributary protection. One of the back and forths, and Marty, as you know, in Baltimore County, we have about 200 miles of waterfront. So this issue always pops up, and it's the battle not only between development, but also the battle to trying to protect the farmers. What's the right balance? And maybe we back up before I ask you the right balance to talk about the role that your organization plays, because this Potomac River's fishery, I had no idea, Marty, I think people would find it fascinating, came about really because the Maryland Oyster Police shot and killed a 26-year Virginian over an oyster battle back in 1959. Give us some of that history in your organization.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounded like an HBO series to me, Marty.
It's fascinating, and it's captured in a couple of books, Oyster Wars. There's two or three books that deal with the oyster wars on the Chesapeake. But the abridged version of our agency is Maryland owns the Potomac River, right? So the river is property of the state of Maryland to the mean low water mark on the Virginia shoreline. However, Virginians and Marylanders historically have accessed the water to crab, fish, things like that. They both fish in it. The Virginians back in the 40s and 50s liked to use dredge gear. It's an efficient, easy way to catch a lot of oysters in a short period of time. However, it's too efficient. So Maryland only allowed hand tongs, which are very laborious. You've probably seen pictures of them where they take the, they're like scissors, 12, 15 feet long. I tried using them one day, it almost killed me. But anyway, so the Virginians would come out and poach on the river. And I believe it was, I think I sent you the notes, but I think it was 1959. There was a young man named Berkeley Muse. He wasn't even a waterman. He was shooting pool in Colonial Beach, Virginia, a little town. And that's no mistake why our office is located there, is because Berkeley Muse, the guy that got shot and killed, was from Colonial Beach. So we decided to put the office right there where the apex of the conflict occurred. But he got shot and killed out on the river by a 18-year-old, almost like a, wasn't a cadet, but a new young natural resources police officer. Back in those days, it wasn't Maryland DNR Natural Resources Police. It was the Oyster Navy. So this young police officer was told to shoot warning shots up in the air, and he wound up hitting Berkeley in the chest and left his wife widowed with three little kids. The two governors got together and said, nobody else is going to get killed over oysters. This is ridiculous. So they decided to form this agency. It's to co-manage the river. So this commission, a bi-state commission, has four appointed members from the state of Maryland and four from the state of Virginia. They're my bosses, essentially, these eight commissioners. And so between the two, we meet quarterly and we manage the Potomac uniquely. So it, I always like to tell people that agency is really fascinating because it was born out of conflict to quell that conflict. But in the modern day, nobody else is shooting at each other over oysters, right? What we do now functionally is we are a laboratory for experimentation. We can do things in PRFC and in the Potomac in our jurisdiction that Maryland, Virginia can't because of political constraints. All the things that you guys are very much aware of, all the push me, pull you, no, you can't try that because this person's going to object to this. We can experiment with different different ways of trying things to plant and raise oysters and manage different resources with both Maryland and Virginia contributing to that experimentation. I well, hope I explained
well,
that.
Marty,
right.
Pick up on that. Hey, talk about that because that's, I mean, your group and your, I was amazed. Those of us who follow public service people coming and going, I mean, your organization has been in existence since December of 1962. You're only the third executive secretary. I mean, you've had amazing stability in the group, and you've been there now almost 10 years. What kinds of things? It's Baltimore positive. So tell our listeners, and again, we're with Marty Gary, executive secretary, Potomac River Fisheries Commission, one of the real preeminent experts on bay health and ecology in the state of Maryland and Virginia. Tell folks what you're finding out that gives you hope about the future health of the bay, because this is what Nestor's into. And it's, give us some hope that the bay is going to get better based on the research you guys are doing.
So let's try something to highlight that experimentation, that laboratory model I told you about. So oysters, you all are familiar with oysters. They are at a low level of abundance right now. Basically about 1-2% is the consensus throughout the Chesapeake Bay, right? There's a whole reason, a suite of reasons why that is. But the real question is, how do we get more oysters back in the bay? They are the foundation for the ecology of the Chesapeake Bay. Oyster reefs are all over the Chesapeake. So how do we get more oysters in the water? Virginia's trying things their way. Maryland's trying things their way. What have we done uniquely in the Potomac? We started back, I guess it was about a year after I got there. And I won't take full credit for it because a lot of the folks were already in the planning process for this. But we worked with a bunch of the watermen who typically go out and harvest on what they call public shellfish areas, right? They've always been accessible to them going back as far as time can document it, 1700s, 1800s. They go out every year and harvest oysters, right? Over time, we put limitations on them, but abundance dropped. So what are we doing differently? We pulled the watermen together and we got them to form, the right term I think would be a consortium, right? A consortium is a bunch of small businesses that come together. And think of watermen. They are individual businesses. They might not have a brick and mortar store on the corner with a sign out in front, but they are, in fact, individual business owners. So we pulled these folks together and formed, some people call it a cooperative, I call it a consortium, and got them to produce an aquaculture project. So pulled their financial resources together and then planted oysters, and then they have shares in that fishery, right? And they have a unique geographic area that we've carved out only for their use. But anybody can get in, and you can go in and out of it. It's not proprietary to those individuals. It's open access, but it's aquaculture. And we really feel that, I don't know that the wild fishery will completely ever go away, but aquaculture appears to be the future. If you talk to the broad suite of different oyster experts throughout the Chesapeake, and there are a lot of them, that's really the future for oysters in the Chesapeake, to shift our, the oysters that we consume to come from aquaculture, farm-raised oysters.
So Marty, are reefs and farm-raised synonymous? In other words, when I see there are increasing number of reefs, is that just another way of saying farm-raised, or are they separate ideas?
They're separate, so, and it's complicated, but the oyster reefs that are there have been historically documented by many surveys going back to the 1800s. And I think one of the graphics, which I doubt you guys have, are nimble enough to put up, I think I sent you a map that has these little white images on it. And there's hundreds and hundreds of these things throughout the Chesapeake Bay. These are documented oyster grounds, oyster reefs, whatever you want to call them. But these are the areas that the harvesters would go to. These are the areas that are ecologically important. If you sample them, that's where the fish go, all the life in Chesapeake Bay. There's a book called Life in the Chesapeake Bay by Robert and Alice Jane Lipson. Alice just passed away about a week ago in St. Michael's. It is the book that every naturalist has at their bedside. A lot of school kids read it. And so her illustrations, Alice Jane Lipson's illustrations, are all about oyster bars and the life on those oyster bars. The aquaculture side of it, DI and Nestor, is they either can be on leased bottom. These are areas that could be on oyster bars, but they try to typically site them elsewhere. And more normal these days are cage culture, which is you see a crab pot out on the water when you're boating. These are cages that are suspended in the water column underneath a float, and the oysters are in there, and every once or twice a week, the oyster farmer will pull the cages, hose them out, clean them, grade those oysters, and when they're ready to sell, they'll sell them. So there's a couple of different ways they do it. They usually are in occupy different areas. It gets a little bit complicated. Hopefully I'm doing an okay job.
And I know Nestor has a million more questions. One of the things, as a little kid, probably from my grandfather, I was always taught you can have oysters in Maryland in months that have an R in them. Is that urban legend, or is that still true?
Well, it's not true anymore. It used to be true because that's when the commercial season exploited the oysters. Because of water temperature, basically, and the biological state of the oyster. Oysters spawn during the summer. If you were to open an oyster in July, you would see what looks like an entirely different organism than you see in December or January. They expend all of their energy to produce sperm and eggs, to reproduce. They're spent. They look almost like they're gelatinous. But in the wintertime, they beef up. They feed and they basically put on a lot of muscle. And so you see a nice, fleshy, robust oyster that you think looks great on the half shell. So that was kind of the main reason. But now you'll see oysters featured in all of your favorite restaurants during July, August, and sometimes they'll have specials. And you wonder, well, Marty said that, you know, the oysters reproduce at that time of the year. Well, the reason why you see those oysters is because they're coming from aquaculture, number one, and they're not. This is where it gets incredibly complicated. They're not a normal oyster. They're a genetically modified oyster. They have three sets of chromosomes. We call them triploids. Tri for triploids. Ploidy is the scientific term for a number of chromosome sets. Human beings and most living organisms have two sets of chromosomes. You probably are familiar with navel oranges that have no seeds. They grow real fast, and they have no seeds because they don't reproduce, right? Because they have three sets of chromosomes. Seedless watermelons is another example.
Nestor, he's talking your language, Nestor. Seedless watermelons.
There'll be a part two to this.
So it is a fascinating topic, but bottom line is the oysters you buy during the summer are farm-raised. They're triploids. They grow twice as fast, but there's a whole backside story to the development of these trichromosomal organisms that we eat. And I don't want to scare your listeners. They're delicious. I'll eat all the triploid oysters I can get my hands on. It's a good thing. But anyway, I think I confused you guys. I'm sorry.
Last thing, I will have you back because I'm doing as this relates to crabs, because, you know, people eat crabs here and, you know, we have crab sponsors and everybody goes out for crabs. How does the oyster relate to the crab and the grasses and the sort of brackish water we have here?
Well, sure. So early life stages of crabs utilize those oyster bars, those oyster reefs for habitat. So it's critical for them. And they'll feed on different organisms on oyster reefs. So are they completely dependent on an oyster per se? Maybe not. But again, oyster reefs, if you could envision, if the water was crystal clear and you look down, you'd see oyster shells all over the place, live living oysters. They provide habitat for so many creatures, but crabs are one of them. So that's what I would say, Nestor, in terms of dependency. It's habitat for them.
Marty Gary, you've been a wealth of information here. We will have you return. At some point, you eat crab cakes, right?
Absolutely.
Nestor, I want to find out when we have Marty back, and we'll have him back real soon talking crabs and bay. I want him when he comes back to talk about, because he sent us some research. There are good fish in the bay, fish that really are good and help clean up the bay, and then there are fish that aren't so good. Boy, you've got to come back and educate us. Nestor, today was biology.
Fish and all that stuff too. So, hey, we're getting to that time. We're going to fish. I have a lot of friends that fish. I'm sort of learning about it a little bit. And I saw people crabbing off the pier in Fells Point the other night, and I thought, oh, it's 85 degrees. Family came down. They were crabbing. I thought, all right, man, we're gonna get more research into this. Marty, appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Great job, Marty. And go Bruce Zimmerman, right?
Yeah. He had a rough outing last night. I think Aaron Judge took one of his balls at about 5 million miles an hour and turned it around the other way.
He'll be telling the kids about that one.
Still special to go out and watch your nephew pitch, right?
Oh my gosh. How many people get that? Who gets the chance to get to that level? Boy, crazy.
Been a crazy month in the Zimmerman tribe, right?
Yes.
Thanks, Marty. Yeah.
Appreciate you, Marty Gary, joining us here. We will definitely have a crab cake with Marty Gary, as well as with lots of folks. As we get out on a crab cake tour, we're going to be at State Fair. I'm wearing my State Fair gear. We're going to be doing our first live event there a little later on in May. Also back with our friends at Fadley's down at Lexington Market, soon coming to Catonsville, and our friends at Costas as well. So talking bay, talking crabs, something we can all agree upon. A crab cake and a beer. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.